America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
All right, everyone, we're back. It's Inside Boxing Live, powered by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, coming off of a fun weekend in the sport of boxing. Not the biggest fights, but some memorable ones nonetheless. I was on the road traveling. Chris was calling a night of legends at the Barclays Center. We have voicemails to get to. Got a lot to get to on this episode, but we're happy to be back in your lives. PPV.com will be streaming Roach versus Pitbull December 6th, which is now adding fights to it left and right. I think Janibek Lara will be on that card as well. Should be a banger.
I like that fight.
Out
like
in San fight. Antonio, Texas. So stream it on PPV.com. Join us in the live interactive chat. We'll have a grand old time doing all that fight week coverage like we always do with PPV.com, our proud presenting sponsor. How are you, Chris? It is Monday, October 20th. I don't know why I gave you the date, why you need to know the date, but you have the date now.
Actually, no, I do need to know the date because I don't know where I am at any time or place. I don't know what day it is. I don't know what month it is. Everything just bleeds together. So thank you for filling me in on the date and time because I thought it was Sunday for some reason.
Kind of has a Sunday feel.
It does have a Sunday feel. It's a slow moving Monday, but whatever. We're here.
Yeah, I traveled from South Padre Island. And if you're wondering where that is, it is
not easy. It's not easy to get to. I know that.
Oh, my goodness. Southernmost part of Texas, basically Monterrey, Mexico, like right on the border. You got to take up. I flew to Houston on the way there, and then it took like a tiny little plane, like one seat in every row, to Brownsville, Texas, which is about an hour and a half from Houston, and then it's about a 45-minute drive over a really long bridge, and the driver's like, "Oh, this is the only way in and out." I was like, "All right, it's a little creepy." It's like how horror movies start. But once we landed, once we got on the island, beautiful, beautiful beaches. And I'm not going to complain that I was watching boxing, hanging out.
This is beautiful beaches in Texas on the Gulf.
Gulf of America. Apparently.
Okay.
I looked at my map. Right. People were like, "Yo, where are you, Dan?" And I was sending them screenshots of my location. And
you sent me Gulf a screenshot of your location. I was like, "Wow, that's
that was for safety more than anything."
Yeah. If you disappeared and I had to take this on myself, this show would not do well.
The cartel almost got to me.
They don't want you. You don't talk badly about them. You're fine. The cartel's
no, we're good.
Awesome.
We're good. We're good. You were in Barclays for this Night of Champions. Like yeah. I was watching from a distance. I was watching, through my clips and stuff. And like, what a crew they assembled for the broadcast team. Jeez, like you, Teofimo, who else?
Andre Berto, Brian Campbell, BC. We had Ak, and we had who else was there? I mean, it was great, and it was kind of a, you know what it was, honestly, Dan, like I came on really late, and it was more, it came together, I don't want to say haphazardly, but kind of just fortuitously, you know, the guys who all came on, and like, even on the production side, so many people just came out, and that's just the strength of Danny Garcia and what he's done for the sport, and everyone wanting to be involved and help him with his potential send-off, you know, into retirement.
Oh, he's coming back, bro, stop.
Oh, absolutely, 1,000%. But you know, I'm gonna do the talking points. You know,
yeah.
it was the farewell to Brooklyn. You know, card was the name of the card for anyone who was not aware. But yeah, BC and I were on it as the main broadcasters, main commentators, excuse me. And we had Andre Berto and Teofimo Lopez rotating in and out throughout the night. Such a pleasure to work with every one of those guys. Berto and I go back. You know, I think everyone on the show knows I love Teofimo Lopez. I love his dad. So really
how was
cool
Teofimo?
Great to on the mic.
Both.
Teofimo's great, and him and I again have a relationship that goes back years. Always a pleasure to see him. And on the mic, he was good. You know, he's not he's got a little ADHD, a little bit. You know, he'll kind of go off on tangents or whatever, and kind of he'll talk. You know, we were like literally having conversation. It's actually a really great listen to people. Anyone who is a big boxing fan and wants to hear certain things, because he would literally just ask me a question about my own fighting style and fight career on the mic while fights are going on mid fight, which was cool. Led to really good conversations. I should do a sit down with him and just chat.
He's got a fascinating mind. Did he bring up my beef with Shakur?
No. Shakur came up all night long. But Richardson Hitchens was yelling from behind us during the broadcast, saying, Teofimo Lopez, you're a bum. So this was assaulting us from behind while we're getting assaulted behind us, you know, from Richardson Hitchens, which I didn't realize it was him. I just thought it was some crazed fan calling Tio a bum. And I was just like, I'm looking at Tio like, don't worry about that, champ. And then I turn around and it's Richardson Hitchens. And I'm like, oh, and I kind of wave and I smile. But it was honestly, as much as he was berating Tio, he did it with a smile. They have the same manager.
It's promo,
he wants the
man.
Fight.
It's promo.
It definitely agitated Tio. He didn't look enthused by it. they did do a stare down at some point with Connolly, Keith Connolly, who was both their managers behind it, smiling very big.
Ear to ear.
Yeah, he's getting paid on both sides in either way. But no, it was a good night of fights. It was fun. It was long. Dan, I might have set a record that night. 14 fights, 100 scheduled rounds. 100.
How many rounds did it go?
I didn't count up how many it actually went. I probably should do that. It wasn't a lot of knockouts, so a lot of those 100 rounds happened. Probably
65, 85.
I'm gonna come back to you on that. I'll let you know how many rounds we actually had.
That's a lot, man.
100 scheduled rounds.
I did the 21 fights in 2 days for MVP this past summer, and everyone at home, I'm not going to say it's hard. This isn't like hard work. It's fun. It is
hard.
Mentally draining.
No. Everybody at home, it is hard. Stop.
Because I'm about to complain.
Stop.
It's hard.
Like, it's very hard. What we do is really hard. AI can't do what we do. Our job security depends on the fact that AI cannot do what we do. It is a very difficult job. And who was I talking to? I was talking to BC about it. And like, people think this is easy. It's not. It's a very difficult job.
No,
you've got to be on
hard, like,
for
mentally.
6 hours straight.
On straight, mentally, you got to be really locked in. You have to be prepared. Of course, a lot of the work happens before you even step in front of the booth. But yeah, it did look like a really cool, whatever it was, like a send off, almost like an ode. Like everyone stepped out. Like So Fabulous was there, and like Meek Mill, a bunch of rappers, a bunch of fighters, New York fighters showed up. Like it looked really cool. I don't know what it did like financially and all that. I don't think fans care too much. But Danny Garcia got the win, knocks out Gonzalez in the fourth round. Looked like a vintage Danny Garcia hook. And he will probably come back because you don't look that good and you don't get that much love and not come back. So I don't know what type of fight he could be in next. He is a big name. He did get people talking this weekend, and it wasn't the biggest fight weekend, but that was pretty cool. Did you see, I know you did see it because I sent you the clip, but we got to talk about this fight that happened on the MVP card between Sebastian Juarez and Demarcus Layton. I believe it's the craziest round in the history of boxing. Or close.
I mean, the back and forth, it was, in terms of technique, very low level. But yeah, it was fun back and forth.
Sebastian Juarez is looked at as an up-and-coming prospect. He's trained by Bob Santos, so you know that he's a serious prospect, or Bob wouldn't take him on. Demarcus Layton was a journeyman, had 4 or 5 losses, 10-5. This classic put in a prospect versus a guy that's been in there or susceptible to being knocked out. This fight was absolutely insane. 30 seconds in, Layton drops Suarez badly, like bad, like arms over the head, fencing position. Ugh. The dude, he gets up and he's completely out of it. Not only that, Nonito Donaire called it, like predicted it right down to the second when he landed it. His arms are up. He's up. He's wobbling. Keep in mind, Lawrence Cole is the referee. We're in Texas, of course. Lawrence Cole has been part of the craziest moments, good and bad. And he's looking at Juarez, and I'm like, you could stop this fight right now. Like he Juarez walked over to the corner, like arms out to the fighter. Like he was just complete, showed every sign that the fight should have been waved off. He lets it go on, Cole, despite giving him like 30 seconds maybe to recover. When he walked over to the corner, Cole stopped his count out of nowhere, didn't say anything, then picked it back up. It was like the longest 10 count ever. So that he's holding then at that point. Juarez, he's holding on for dear life. He's falling down, doesn't have his legs. He's trying to do like double leg takedowns. Cole decides to take a point away right away. Rather than potentially DQ him, rather than stop the fight, he starts holding again, like holding on for dear life, not clinching, like legitimate like attempts to survive. Takes another point away, Lawrence Cole. So now he's down 3 points, Juarez.
I thought I had a bad first round against Ruslan Provodnikov. This is even worse.
Bro, then Juarez is like, I guess, recovering at some point. He gets
so
up.
So what is that? That's a 10-6 round at that point?
10-6 right? Round at that point.
10-8 then, minus 2 for holding. It's a 10-6 round.
10-6 round at this point. Juarez then knocks down Leighton twice. Sends him almost through the ropes onto our announce table. With about 10 seconds left, he fires off the final combination. Cole waves off the fight. Juarez wins. So 5 knockdowns, 2 point deductions, all in 3 minutes. The first round, it was wild scene. It was nuts. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
We had DeMarcus Leighton on a ProBox TV show. He fought Marques Valle and got starched in one round. Just completely blitzed and blasted out. Didn't expect it to be a round of the year type of a matchup because you know, you got a guy who's 10-0 or 9-0 with 7 knockouts. Like, you expect him to just kind of walk through a guy like that. But hey, that's why it's boxing. That's why we fight the fights.
And he, I saw him at the airport yesterday, and he looked deflated, but also like kind of proud. It's like he should have won. They should have gave him that fire. Or any other referee, I feel like, would have.
Oh, you saw DeMarcus?
Yeah.
You saw DeMarcus? Oh, okay. I mean, listen, on paper, he wasn't supposed to win. So, you know, the fact that he had it and was that close, that sucks. You know, like, especially when you're a guy like him who's a journeyman and your plan is to get out there and try to beat, you know, these guys that you're not supposed to beat. You're not brought in to win. You're brought in
give
to test
a
little bit. I mean, yeah, why not? I mean, Juarez, that seems like a kind of fight, like when you're at the end of it, you're like, you're in the dressing room later on and you're like, did I win? I'm like, yeah, no, you're not.
There's no way he knew where he was, but he was so out. He was so out after the first knockdown. Like, could have easily stopped the fight because he was stumbling. I was looking at his eyes, you know, we're so close. I look at their eyes, look at their legs and try to say, all right, they're okay. And his eye, he didn't know where he was. His legs obviously didn't know where he was either. Yeah, it was a crazy, crazy, fight. Only the second craziest thing that happened this week of me becoming a ring man.
You've been talking about this for years, though. This is your ultimate destiny, actually. When AI takes over and podcasts are no longer a thing, there's just going to be AI versions of ourselves talking about everything that happens when we sell our likeness to whatever the AI overlords. You know, that's going to be actually your future job. You're going to be a ring man.
Ring man. There could be some more content coming out. The MVP event models want to teach me their ways. You know, I've been around them my whole life. I was telling them how I used to go to the fights with my dad as a kid, and some of my first interactions with women were ring girls winking at
me. My first interactions with women were ring girls. No wonder you have so much issues with women.
It's true, bro. It's absolutely true. I would sit on my dad's lap. With his partner, CompuBox partner, and the ring girls would walk past, and they must have told him or something, or my dad's partner, and they would wink at me, and I'd be like 7 or 8, and I'd be like, whoa, those girls, they're winking at me, dad, they're winking at me, the ring girls, so it's been a long journey for me, and Mike Leonardi told me that from MVP that it was actually it began as ringmen. It was a guy in a suit. In like the early 20s, he was just walking around with a sign that just said which round it was going to stick. So I might do a little dive into.
Yeah, who was the brilliant guy who came up with the idea of putting them in bathing suits? And then
there's got to be a guy with a cigar. It's like, make them half naked.
Yeah, it's the opposite of. Back then, it was the opposite of what Disney is now. Disney's now like, yeah, make the superheroes a girl. Make them, you know, make them dominant. Back then, they were like, make it a broad. In a bathing suit.
Yeah.
and high heels.
It's crazy.
But how are they going to walk? How are they going to walk in the soft room in high heels? I don't care. Put them in high heels.
They might fall. It is hard. I actually.
It's okay.
I did try it for. It's hard. I was out of breath, which is not a good sign for Unk. I was out of breath. I did my one lap around the ring.
Bro, what you're in a you've moved. You're in a whole new, really nice apartment complex. You've got a gym, and you're out of shape. What's going on here, buddy?
Yeah, I couldn't walk. I couldn't walk. Hold the sign over my head. Smile. The same time, that talk about hard. Talk about like broadcasting's hard. Those ring girls have it tough.
Yeah, they work. They work. I
they do.
I
they do work.
I'll
give
hat.
Them that. Tip my hat. Absolutely. They're part of the. They're all part of the show. It's all part of the big show that is boxing. Let's get into the voicemails before we get canceled. We got a lot of great voicemails. We'll start it off. Oh wait, that's not a voicemail. Let's get Teofimo. This guy wants to talk to Teofimo.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Dan. Hector from Boise, Idaho. My question is, how long are we going to keep sticking up for Teofimo Lopez, man? He is one of my favorite boxers of this generation, right? I honestly think he has the best resume out of this school or his class. But I am just getting so frustrated with the antics, man. You know, with the whole racial stuff that he does once in a while. Now the latest is I saw a story on his Instagram where he's asking us, the fans, who do we want to see him fight? You know, Manny Pacquiao or Shakur. And I'm like, dude, you just spent the last month and a half barking back and forth with Dan's best friend, Shakur. And if I sound frustrated, I love watching this dude box, man.
Yeah, I understand your frustrations, my man. I've heard about this Pacquiao rumor. I know that you said the Shakur didn't come up once this weekend. Did Pacquiao come up at all? Because there are some talks that on January 24th, it could potentially be Teofimo Lopez Pacquiao. And the source is Teofimo. He went on a podcast like last month and said that Pacquiao's in discussions.
Yeah, no, none of that came up. You know, we had so many fights to call, and it was again a rotation of Berto and Teofimo and Ak in and out. So I didn't have a chance to really chat too much with any of the guys. Really, we were on the mic the entire time, so not a lot of personal talk in between. Didn't get a chance to talk about what's next for him. It wasn't something that came up on air, which wouldn't be super professional while guys are fighting. But I understand where our man's coming from. The frustration is certainly there because I agree with him. I think he's one of the most talented guys in the sport today. He's a superb athlete. His resume is phenomenal, even at this age and what he's been able to do so far. But you know, he always leaves us yearning for more. Like it could be more. It could be better. When you have that kind of sublime talent, you want to see it showcased, and we're just not getting it. Listen, when that Shakur fight was announced, when they were in discussions and saying that fight was going to happen, I was looking around like, hell no, that's not happening. Jose Guzman, great trainer. He actually had a fighter fight on the undercard as a co-main event on Saturday night. He's like, yo, it's signed. And you keep being like, oh, it's signed. I'm like, bro, that fight, I'm like, not happening, bro. Not happening. And he kept being like, no, it's right here. It's right here. I'm like, dude, that's not how it works. Just because it's right here doesn't mean that fight's happening. I'm telling you that fight's not happening. So,
hope so.
Obviously now. Now, yeah, we all hope so. But Dan, realistically, do you think that fight's happening next?
No, very skeptical because we're dealing with two guys that have been snake bitten in their career, whether it's from their own doing or whether it's just like guys not wanting to fight them. With Teofimo, a lot of it's his own doing, turning down fights left and right, pissing off Turkey, pissing off the money man,
opportunity.
Which is absolutely insane.
He had an opportunity to fight Devin Haney. Much easier fight than
turned it down.
Shakur Stevenson. For Dan, I know the numbers. Crazy
talking about
money.
Teofimo turned down, not Shakur.
That fight didn't happen. No. Right, I'm talking about the Devin Haney fight and Teofimo Lopez. That crazy money that fight was going to happen. Didn't happen. So I'm very skeptical about those kind of fights because that's again, I think that's an easier fight than Shakur Stevenson. Not saying it's an easy fight. Still a hard fight. Devin Haney is very, very talented, and I'm a fan of Devin Haney and his skill set for sure.
No, but it's definitely easier of the two.
It's an easier puzzle to solve, put it
that
way.
Yes, that's why I wasn't that excited like right away when I heard Teofimo Shakur, because I felt like we were going, not scraping the bottom of the barrel, which is the worst analogy for this, but in terms of big fights that were in the barrel, in that particular barrel. They were going through them all. Like, all right, Teofimo Haney, that makes the most sense. All right, let's try to make that one. It doesn't happen because Teofimo turns it down or whatever. All right, let's go to the next one then. Shakur versus Teofimo. Oh, wait, they're not even at the same weight class. You know, Shakur's just settling into 135 now and is winning belts there. Teofimo's talking about going to 147. This fight doesn't even really make sense. They were never really even talked about together as a fight. It was always Teofimo and Haney, Teofimo and other fighters there. That's why right away I was like, kind of gave me like, I don't know if I want to see this fight. Now, on top of it, I don't think it's going to be that much of a banger. At this point, as a boxing fan, with the lack of big fights that we're getting this year, I welcome Teofimo versus Shakur with open arms. I would love to see it. Or will we get it next? Probably not. And to our caller's frustration with Teofimo, bro, he, one fight we're looking at for him this year. One fight. Yeah. Barboza.
And there's not one going to happen before the end of the year either. I mean,
it's not happening. Is crazy. In the prime of your career, you're not injured. Man. I understand your promoter doesn't have a network, but doesn't matter. Your last fight was on DAZN. I'm pretty sure Top Rank is paying. It's fine for you to go out there and fight. You're not injured. You're not really tied down. I don't get it. I don't get a lot of these guys.
Yeah, but Shakur's he's also
only
above all
one
that.
Fight this year.
He's above all that. He can get a fight. He's a big enough name. He's a big enough.
You're
star
in a different
in
stratosphere.
Different stratosphere. He shouldn't be struggling to get fights, and he's not. He's not struggling to get fights. There's plenty of fights out there. He can literally fight guys that don't belong in the ring with him, and people will still tune in, and it can still get made. And he'll still get paid handsomely. You know, he's not going to get the 10, 15 million he's probably looking for, but he can stay active. And an active Teofimo Lopez is a very dangerous man. Remember when he came back and he first came back at 140 and he had a bunch of fights in a row and then walked into the Josh Taylor fight? So he was active over that year. He had like four fights and he goes into he has a Josh Taylor fight and he looked phenomenal against a very, very dangerous guy. You and I were ringside that night. And when he's active, he's a problem. When he's inactive, he has Sandor Martin type nights. He has Jermaine Ortiz type nights where you're like,
What is he doing? What is he doing when he's not on camera? Like, I know he's very dedicated. He's always in shape. I don't mean he's doing anything like drugs and stuff, but like, I feel like he's straying further away from like getting the big fight. I don't understand how you can fight one time and want to be like, in your mind, want to be one of the top names. Like, what other sport do we have this where we see you one night? Aaron Judge plays 162 games. LeBron James is about to embark on his 20th season playing 80 games if he's not injured. Like, it's wild to me. I mean, Shakur.
Well, it's why we're having so much trouble making stars. So,
I just don't understand how, you know, Teofimo's mindset. I don't really want to get into his mind sometimes. I just want to see him box. Hopefully, we get the Shakur fight. But I have heard strong rumors that, January 24th with Pacquiao, it's not set on Rolly because Rolly has a WBA mandatory now. Shakur, I don't know if these rumors are true too, his hands. I've heard a lot of things there. So like the Shakur-Teofimo fight is not about to be announced and Rolly-Pacquiao is not set. So I think they're looking for an opponent for Pacquiao for January 24th. And I believe that Teofimo Lopez is on the very short list. So we could potentially get Teofimo versus Manny Pacquiao in January of 2026.
That'd be awesome. I don't see it. I think it's going to be Rollies.
I think Teofimo would hurt Pacquiao bad.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great fight for Pacquiao. I think it's a very interesting matchup. Does he want to fight? I don't know if Pacquiao wants to fight a guy at that level at this age. And look at the Mario Barrios fight. Literally, he took that fight because he was like, oh, I could beat that guy. And damn well, he almost did. And probably a lot of people did think he did. So Teofimo's not that guy. He's not watching Teofimo Lopez and goes, I could beat that guy. No way.
Besides what does it indicate too? Is it at 140? Because I believe that Pacquiao should only be fighting now to like break history. He should be trying to get that welterweight title. So if it's either Barrios or Rolly, that made sense, you know, because they're winnable fights for Pacquiao. And it's also a chance to become a world champ at a really old age, which is also, I believe, a record for welterweight. So what does it get out of fighting Teofimo besides it just being like a money type of thing? So
I don't know if Manny's going to go down to 140. I don't know if he would.
Why would he? He's old.
He's been fighting at 47 for like 10 years, and he's been super inactive. I don't see him going down another weight class to try and vie for a title there. Rolly's just makes too much sense. As soon as the Mario Barrios fight ended, I was like, this is either rematch or Rollies, because Rollies was getting thrown around immediately after that fight. It's going to be Rollies. I don't know why. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why we're playing this game. It's going to be
Because Rollie was just given a mandatory. The Gassiev guy. I'm going to just butchered his name. I know.
They're not going to. It's Manny. Manny leaps and bounds over every rule that has ever been established, not those many rules in governing bodies. Anyway, who cares? It's Manny.
Yeah.
Manny can do
it. It's also kind of crazy that, like, it's kind of a knock on these young guys, like Teofimo. Like, dude, you're being rumored to fight Pacquiao, not the other way around. Like, Pacquiao is in the driver's seat because there's a lack of stars. Because your generation doesn't fight enough that a 47-year-old guy who's just enshrined in the Hall of Fame is coming back and dictating dates and dictating opponents because you guys can't figure out, don't fight enough. All right, here's the next one.
What's up, Dan and Chris? This is Alex. Love the show. My question is, I need someone to explain to me, like I'm a 5-year-old, why Turkey thinks it's a good idea to stack 5-6 great fights on one card. As we've seen, the boxing schedule has been empty. You can still make great cards if you bust down the November 22nd card into 2 or 3 different cards. Now you're actually helping build the sport, and it looks less like you're just trying to drive other promoters out of the sport. That's my question. You know, love boxing. I think we need to slow down on calling Turkey the savior of boxing since he said that he's going to get rid of pay-per-views, and now they have a pay-per-view subscription that fights like Joseph Parker versus Fabio Worley are going to be on. But nonetheless, yeah, please explain to me why Turkey thinks it's a good idea to super stack cards instead of spreading them out so that people have entertainment multiple weekends a month.
Yeah, I don't even think we need to explain that, like you're 5. I think you got a pretty good hold on the sport right now.
Pretty good grasp on it, for sure.
Oh, November 22nd. Go ahead.
They have the mindset, more is better. More is better. Bigger. More. More good fights. More big fights. Put them all together. But that's the thing. When you get people who come into the sport from other professions or other places and are trying to reinvent the wheel, this sport is so old. You cannot reinvent it. And you're seeing now, even the moves that Turkey's made over the past couple of years that he's been in the sport, he's adjusted quite a bit. He pays attention to what's going on. He sees what works. He sees what doesn't. He tried a lot of things early on that are falling to the wayside. He's trying new things all the time. He's trying to be very innovative. But more and more, you're seeing him fall back into the same lane of what every promoter has always done. And that always happens when people come into the sport, because you cannot change the entire sport. I don't care how much money you have. There's way too many factors. There's way too many players in the game. And there's way too many people and factors, like I said, that don't want the game to be changed because they like the way it's going. They like the way it's always been. And it's the wild, wild west. So there is opportunities for a lot of different people to butter their bread in boxing.
Well said. And one thing I will say, too, is that, you know, Turkey is kind of monopolizing boxing with the checkbook. And we're now seeing a lot of promoters fall in line, and a lot of promoters work together on these super cards that we're getting. Like November 22nd is a super card. But we don't have much between now and November 22nd. We haven't had much, albeit a few small cards, since Canelo Crawford. So, yeah, you could spread it out. And my point is that Turkey has the ability now to kind of look at the schedule and dictate it. Because in the past, these other promoters don't care about the other promoters' shows going on. There's Eddie Hearn is not calling up Frank Warren and go, hey, what date are you doing Atalma? Because I'm looking to do a show. And, you know, it wouldn't really make sense if we were competing against each other. No, we're going to jam 5 cards down your throat on one Saturday night and make you, the fan at home, decide what you want to watch. And I hate that about the sport. And it's the disorganization of the sport, the way it's set up. But now with Turkey involved, with him pretty much working with every promoter, they could do this. They could make a better schedule. But for some reason, he wants to put them all in one card. I'm not going to complain about November 22nd. I'm going to watch banger after banger, and it's going to be an awesome night as fight fans. But if you spread it out a little, yeah, I believe it could probably do more for your brand, for Riyadh Season, for Ring Magazine, for all their assets that they have if they spread it out more. It's more talking points. It's more shows. It's just what we've seen, and they have the ability to do that now because they're kind of controlling everything right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it is a dog-eat-dog world in boxing. It's always been that way. It's that way in the gyms. It's that way in the promotions. It's that way with managers and fighters. That's just the nature of the business because of what the sport is all about. But I see things are adjusting all the time. And even, like I said, even Turkey, the way that he's maneuvering and doing certain things are changing as they're learning the sport more and more.
In terms of the pay-per-view stuff, too, I know that Wardley is a pay-per-view this weekend, and I think they're making, they just announced some fight that's going to be a pay-per-view. That's just never going to go away. When they talked about pay-per-view going away, I just didn't exactly buy in, because it, with the way the sport is set up, it's like the only way to get the fighters paid, and it's the only way to kind of salvage some of these things is by putting it on pay-per-view. So when I heard, all right, pay-per-view is dead once again, I know UFC is going to the Paramount deal. That's only because Paramount gave them $7 billion. So they can kind of afford to do this subscription thing. I don't see anyone in boxing giving – I don't see any streaming services out there giving boxing $7 billion. You know, Top Rank still doesn't have a home right now.
You're paying either way. Whether it's a pay-per-view model or it's subscription-based, I think everything is shifting to a subscription base, and there might be pay-per-views on top of that, or some kind of pay-to-watch kind of thing, pay-to-play. You're always going to have to pay. So getting rid of pay-per-view makes you think, like, oh, we don't have the pay-per-box. No, you're still paying. You
pay for subscriptions. They're going to roll out a subscription thing.
No, you're still paying.
Yeah. All right, next one.
What's up, guys? It's Adam calling from Canada. And I had a question about Anthony Joshua. I saw that Ring released their top 10 heavyweights, and Joshua wasn't even in the top 10 while he has been out for a year. We have Fury at the number one spot, who's apparently retired. So I wanted you guys to give your opinions on where you think Joshua ranks in the heavyweight division, and if you think it's disrespectful to leave him out of the top 10. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, so I have the Ring magazine rankings right now. The heavyweight, he's talking about Fury is number one, and Joshua somehow has fallen out of the top 10, which I believe is a little disrespectful. I mean, Fury hasn't fought in a long time.
Yeah, my Joshua argument was going to be that, you know, if you haven't fought in a year, then you're out of the, you're out, but Tyson hasn't either. So,
and they have him number one. Like, not even like, hey, we'll put you 5-4. Fury's number one. Parker, two. So, Caballo 3, okay, yeah. Dubois 4, Hergovic 5, Wardley 6, Zhang 7, Bacoli 8, Atoma 9, Ajagba 10. With obviously Usyk is the champ, so he's not ranked.
You can't have Ajagba above Anthony Joshua. I think Anthony Joshua is still probably in the top 5, honestly. To be all honest, those, Caballo and all those guys, they're untested at the world class level. And you got Anthony Joshua, who faltered his last fight, whatever, but doesn't matter. The guy has been a dominant force in the sport in the past. And that's them saying he's basically shot. And I don't necessarily agree with that. And we're going to see him in Tyson Fury, I'm sure, pretty soon, if not next, then in the next year or so. So how do you work that out where the guy's not even ranked? And he's probably going to fight the quote unquote number one ranking guy.
Yeah, Joshua's last fight was in September of 2024. I thought the Dubois fight was a lot. I hope that happens.
Yeah,
recently.
Almost a little over a year ago, yeah.
And Fury has said he's retired. Joshua is not retired. Joshua is fighting again. He's going to be fighting the big giant Mamaluk. What's his name? Manalak. Manuk. Mamalaka. Big Frankenstein.
I know. It's not his name. It's definitely not
his name. His name isn't Frankenstein?
No. Who'd be last fight? Mama Luke either.
Mama Luke. I'm not trying to disrespect the guys. He would crush me into pieces.
He just fought David Allen.
He just fought Dave Allen. So I'll pull up Dave Allen. Do a little box rec backwards search here. Dave Allen.
You mentioned
Mama Luke. Now I'm pulling up a Dave Allen who was in black and white, who fought in the 1984. That's not the Dave Allen we're looking for.
His name is Arsalanbek Makhmudov. Excuse me.
Oh, you got it down too. Yeah. he's fighting Joshua.
Arsalanbek Makhmudov. And it's so funny that we were talking about how much work we do leading up to these shows, and we can't even pronounce fucking guys. We can't even pronounce.
Well, I didn't prepare for that one.
Yeah.
Didn't prepare for that Makhmudov. One. Yeah. So Joshua will be back. Fury, I'm not 100% sold on being back, but if Fury does come back, he will fight Joshua. To your point, man, yeah, these rankings, I like to use the Ring rankings. We'll talk about this on the show a lot because it's like very organized, and I can go to a website, and I for the most part, I think they're a good rankings policy. But there are humans, and there is biases, there is reasonings behind who is in, who isn't. So you really can't base that. But if you use your eyes, you can say, hey, Joshua is more proven than F.A. Ajagba. Joshua, you know, is probably better than Zhang, Bacoli, Hergovic right now, who are all in the top 10.
Again, how do you have Zhang ahead of Joshua?
Joshua.
Joshua just I mean, Zhang got knocked out. He hasn't fought in a while. Got knocked out in his last fight by a guy who is not really tested at the world level. I mean, whatever. Like you said, rankings at this point are more of a suggestion or an estimation rather than something that we can really, you know, really
dig your teeth into.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're basically talking points at this point.
Did you see this, though, in the heavyweight division? Alexander Usyk says that he will not fight Moses Aljamain. He wants to fight till he's 41, but Aljamain will not be one of those opponents.
Yeah, I could have told you that. I think we've talked about that. I mean, the fight never made sense. I mean, it was pushed for a little bit, but like, what would be the reason that fight would make any sense right now?
Other Moolah? Than, money?
Yeah, well, is that really the most expensive fight to be made? Is that the lucrative fight to be made for Usyk? I don't think so.
I think it is. I think in a year it is. I also don't believe Usyk 100%.
How is that the most lucrative fight possible?
Because look at the names I just listed at heavyweight. There's not, like, he already beat Fury. We don't need to see Usyk versus Fury again. We don't need to see Usyk versus Dubois again. We don't need to see Usyk versus Joshua. Well, Usyk versus Parker has not been made because they can't generate the money enough to pay the guys. So, I mean, he's not Hergovic, Wardley, those aren't generating money either. This phenom, Atuma, has to go out there and win more. And then I would say if Usyk's – a lot more. He's got to win a title, one that Usyk gives up or something, or just keep knocking guys out. And if Usyk says he's going to fight till he's 41, that's three more years. You're telling me in the next 3 years, Usyk-Atuma isn't the biggest fight you could make at heavyweight?
Possibly, but we won't know. I bet you that Wardley is closer to getting an Usyk fight than Atuma. Wardley goes out there and he beats Joseph Parker this weekend. He's going to be Usyk's next opponent. Watch.
That's not bad because he'll have a groundswell support. You know,
and he beat the guy that should be fighting Usyk next. And I think there's going to be people love Wardley. He's very popular.
It's a fascinating fight this weekend, by the way, Parker and Wardley.
It is a fascinating fight. And Parker, I believe, is the favorite and he should win the fight. But listen, this is a heavyweight division, man, and Wardley pulls things out of the fire. He's an exciting guy. He believes in his ability, believes in his punch. It's an interesting matchup. And I think it's really important. It's an important fight for the heavyweight division in terms of who comes out victorious. If Parker wins like we're supposed to, he's supposed to win. You would think he would win. Doesn't do a whole lot. Wardley wins. Whoa. That's a good chance.
Yeah. But also, too, like, don't tell me Usyk's ducking Aljamain. Usyk hasn't ducked anyone.
I also
believe it's a negotiation tactic. Why would he say, yeah, I want to fight the guy? Then all his leverage is gone. So, yeah, say I'm not ready for this guy yet, or I'm never going to fight him. No, he's not ready. He is ready. Or say, I'm not going to fight him. You don't have to say I am going to fight him, because why? You don't have to say that. You're the man, Usyk. You're in the driver's seat, not Aljamain. But I do hope we see it one day, because I think it'd be really cool to see a fight like that. All right, here we go. Next one.
Yo, 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 this is Dolo, or Doe. I do have a take, and I'm watching the Danny Garcia card, and I hear you commentating Chris Algieri, but that's not the point. The take I have, I've been really thinking about this, is the Brian Norman and Devin Haney fight coming up on the 22nd. I personally have Brian Norman. I feel like he's just as quick as Haney, knows how to move, he's young, he's athletic, he's powerful. And just from watching Haney fight, his last fight at the 140 or the catchweight or whatever it was, it just seemed like he was scared to let his hands go. Like, once he was in range, like, yeah, I guess he outboxed him, even though he didn't really throw shit, but his hands just weren't, like, he wasn't letting them go. And I feel like if he's that close against someone like Norman, Norman's going to let his hands go. Unlike the opponent that Haney just had, he wasn't letting his hands go in that fight, but when they're that close and they're fighting that range, I just feel like he's going to get caught with some power or touched up. And when he gets touched up, it might cause some type of PTSD.
He went on for a while there, but we got the gist of it. I mean, it's a great fight, Norman Haney, and we've talked about it at length, and we're going to keep talking about it because I think it's the biggest fight remaining. We're about a month away. But yeah, our guy is saying there, Chris, well, we're thinking. That's why what makes this such an intriguing fight is Haney's chin is susceptible. He does get up a lot, Haney. He's never been knocked out, but he's been knocked down quite a few times, especially with Ryan Garcia. And Norman is untested. We don't know what Norman is. Will he struggle with a boxer? This is like a podcaster's dream, this fight, in terms of talking points and what ifs. But I can't wait for this fight.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that kind of look at this and they're like, boxing is what have you done for me lately? Always, right? And in terms of both these guys, you look at this and it's like, by the eye test, yeah, of course, Norman goes out there and blasts him out. He's fighting at 47. He's never fought there. Norman's on this crazy run of knocking guys out in spectacular fashion. Haney looked like his hands were in his pockets and fighting a super defensive fight when he fought Ramirez. So, yeah, of course, Brian Norman's going to win this fight. No. That's not the way boxing works. You have to compare these guys. Boxing math does not work. You cannot look at this and be like, well, he fought Ramirez like this. If he does that against Brian Norman, he's going to get blown out. That's not true, first of all. First of all, if he fights Ramirez, if he fights Norman the way he fought Ramirez, how is he going to get knocked out? He moved the entire time. If he stands there and trades with him, sure, he could. But the difference is Ramirez is 5'10" with a 72-inch reach. He's got a good left hook, the punch that was giving him a lot of trouble against Ryan Garcia. That is Devin Haney. He's got a very good, hard, stiff jab. He's a guy who's a former world champion, physically strong, good puncher. And he was coming off of the quote-unquote PTSD of the Ryan Garcia fight. On top of that, Devin Haney is a rhythm fighter. He is a boxer. Guys like that who are inactive lose their rhythm very, very often. And they need to be busy. A guy like Devin Haney needs to be busy. He needs to work out his rhythm. He needs to work out his boxing skills. He's not a puncher. Punchers can just show up. I could just show up and I'm like, I'll find him. No, a boxer needs to find that rhythm, needs to be in fantastic condition, needs to be able to go 12 rounds. For me, I look at the Devin Haney versus Ramirez fight as I need to get back. I need to get the Ryan Garcia fight in my back mirror, in the rearview mirror, excuse me. I need to get out there. I need to find my timing. I need to go 12 rounds. I need to test my conditioning, and I need to do it against a dangerous guy with a good left hook. He did that. Was it pretty? No. Is it making you think like, this guy's the next world beater? No. But Brian Norman has been lined up over and over and over again his last couple fights with guys that will stand in front of him and trade. And that's why he's blasting them out. These are guys that were absolutely tailor-made for him. Jin Sasaki, Derek Cuevas, Giovanna Santillan, all guys that stand right in front of him and bang. Listen, I called the Janelson Figueroa Boca Chica fight. It went 3 rounds. He got dropped. He got rocked. The guy wasn't there right in front of him. It was a fight. And it looked like he was on his way to losing that fight.
Yes, and yes. On his way to getting like cut from top rank.
Correct. And Boca Chica is a guy that's fought on Pro Box TV, has lost on Pro Box TV multiple times. A guy who's underwhelming, he's got a lot of skill, whatever, and he looks like he could be really good, doesn't perform. So I know we're all recency biased that, Ryan Norman Jr. is this killer, but he had the right kinds of guys in front of him. Devin Haney is not that guy. Now, I'm not saying that Devin Haney is not going to get knocked out by Ryan Norman. He absolutely could. But I'm just saying it's not that easy to pick a winner in this fight based on their most recent performances.
This fight is super interesting because of all those reasons that you just listed and like the variables and like recent performances, puncher versus quote unquote mover boxer in Haney. But it also is an interesting experiment in boxing fans and what you've seen last and momentum and how things can change over time. Well, Devin Haney fights in May and the Times Square card looks horrendous, running all over the ring. There's no way he can beat any champ fighting like this. And we're all down on Devin Haney. He's taking the brunt of it for months. Then Norman steps into the ring a month later, knocks out Jin Sasaki in spectacular fashion. And then they announced this fight. And the immediate reaction was Brian Norman is going to take off Devin Haney's head. That's the immediate reaction once they announced this fight. Then as we get more separated from our emotions and we start to think more, I think it's a total... The tide has completely changed where it's like Devin Haney is going to outbox Norman and he might actually make it look easy in there. And that's just how boxing works when we don't have a lot of fights to like, and we're just kind of basing it off of recent performances and emotions. So love this fight though, for all those reasons.
Great fight. Young guys fighting in their prime. It's what the sport needs.
Here we go.
Yo, what's going on, fellas? Hey, man, just a fellow boxing nerd, man, out here in Denver, Colorado. Name is Gary. Love the show. Man, but just some boxing nerd questions, really, guys. Like, I just wanted to hear what you guys preferred when it comes to the weight divisions, you know, 154. You know, some people like to call it super welter. I prefer junior middle. 140, some people love super welterweight. I prefer junior welter. Or, excuse me, super lightweight. I prefer junior welter. What do you guys think about that? I know that it caused some confusion with some other people, but, you know, there's certain things that I look at. I'm like, you know what? Junior middleweight and junior welterweight sounds better to me. Also, the other just little boxing nerd thing that I always say in my head is I always hear you guys going, even Chris, it's like, there's no overtime in boxing. I get that. But technically, overtime in boxing would be 13 rounds. I just want to hear what you guys have to say about that, man. Let's show y'all be cool.
Bro, Gary from Colorado has gotten into the marijuana. Let's just state that off the top.
Because gotten into it, like
he's gotten into the bag. He's going through the bag of pot and he's smoking reefer and he's
deep
calling
thinking,
us up.
Deep thinking on shallow discussion
topics.
But
we'll start topics. Backwards though. He says that Chris always says there's no overtime in boxing. Technically, it's a 13th round, but there's never been a 13th round fought besides overtime boxing once or twice. So technically,
I didn't understand that one.
Okay, number one, there is no overtime.
Well, and that's actually not what I say. I say you don't get paid for overtime in boxing. I didn't say overtime in boxing. I said you don't get paid for overtime.
That cliche holds up. Technically, there is no overtime in boxing, Gary. To your other points.
Literally, there is no overtime.
And Gary's other point about what we call the weight classes is it's a nerd question for sure, but it's mostly like a marketing thing. Like I remember when I worked at Fox Sports and I was doing like little hits for them, they did not want me to call junior lightweight because they felt like it made the division seem small. They said call it super welterweight. Super sounds
super
better than junior.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know what I mean. Like, don't call junior anything when you talk about 154. Call it super welterweight because it sounds super. It sounds better. So I don't know. I just think it's like a preference of the network, a preference of the organization.
Yeah, the governing body too. Depends on the governing body. Because I think WBO. I think I'm super lightweight WBO world champion, but also it's junior welter and other organizations. I guess.
What do you want to be called?
It's dealer's choice. I liked junior welterweight because once you step into the 40s, you're in the welterweights. You know, lightweight is in the 30s, so I like junior. I like junior because you're in the same 10 pounds range. You know, so
super
like welterweight.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you're from 40 to 50 is the welterweights. So you got junior welterweight is 140. You got welterweight is 47. Junior middleweight is 154. Middleweight's 160. So you're in that range going up. Junior lightweight is 130, lightweight's 135, and it doesn't go across it doesn't work across the gamut there because I even said that middleweight's 60, but junior middleweight's 54, so that's also not in the fives. But no, I like junior. I don't think there's any kind of connotation in terms of it's not as big, it's not as special. But yeah, I guess it's whatever you want. Super featherweight, don't love it. Super lightweight, I'm fine with. I don't mind that super lightweight, but junior welterweight, I think sounds better.
You're a lightweight, but you're the best of them. You're the super lightweight. I know what you're saying there. Junior welterweight means
junior's fine. I like junior.
Hard hitting question from our friend in Colorado, who definitely got into some edibles before he made that phone call.
Colorado things are a little different.
Hey, Danny and Chris, this is Edward calling from Houston, Texas. I just kind of want to talk about everything going on with Gervonta Davis, like maybe his heart not being in the game anymore and all that stuff. Well, I was the one who posed that mythical matchup or fantasy matchup of Shane Mosley against him at 135. And at the time, I posed that fantasy matchup because I thought it would be a competitive fight. But now, man, I take it back. Never mind. Shane will wipe the floor with him. I don't think Gervonta just has the heart for it. As soon as he gets into deep waters, he just doesn't pull through. And I think, you know, Mosley, he was a warrior and he just fought the best and was in tough fights. And Mosley, by brutal KO. That's it. I just wanted to reverse my original prediction on that. This would be a very competitive fight, but no, it wouldn't.
I respect the hell out of that for him calling back and because we said it right
later.
Away, I think. Yeah, because I immediately said, I was like, absolutely not. Shane Mosley wipes the floor of them. And I said that immediately because, for one, Shane was an absolute demon at 135. I mean, he threw a ton of punches. He could punch. And Shane's chin has always been good at every single weight class. So if you're not throwing shots and you're waiting for the big knockout shot, you're not knocking out Shane. How on any planet would Tank ever beat Shane? He's going to knock him out. No one's ever knocked out Shane. How are we going to make that work? So,
that debate was before the Roach fight. Not that that would matter to some, but there were a lot of people. Tank wasn't what we've seen in the last year. Tank has arguably lost to Roach and is not fighting Jake Paul. So the you can make what you want of that. And Shane Mosley hasn't fought at all, but his still Shane Mosley, his legend still lives on. He hasn't lost either. So yeah, this guy, that was a year ago, because I was looking at my, you know, your phone gives you those little memories in your photo book. And 1 year ago, I was in Puerto Rico and Mosley was there at an MVP event. And it was right in the middle of this debate that this caller started, which is kind of cool. He started this debate and we talked about it and made it all over the Twitter, boxing Twitter. And I actually got to ask Mosley about it himself 1 year ago today in Puerto Rico. And Mosley, of course, was like, oh, beat the heck out of town. I mean, every fighter's going to say that. But yeah, I think put some more respect on Mosley's name. Not so much disrespecting Tank. Not disrespecting Tank, but just put a little more respect on Shane Mosley's name.
So please list the pros and cons of staying in the same weight class for 15 years versus the pros and cons of going up one weight class every 5 years for 15 years. Thank you.
Weird call. Was he like hiding in upstairs? Like, so his wife wouldn't hear him make the phone call? Like, he was whispering. Yeah,
He's obsessed with IBL and his wife. It's putting a lot of strain on their marriage. Yeah. So he's upstairs calling from an undisclosed location.
Yeah, and he wants to talk about, I don't understand fully what he meant. Like, what's the pros and cons? No, because
we spoke about this on a past show about, you know, everyone, we're in the era of everyone's jumping new weight classes and like, that's what's so important. And that I was kind of arguing like, well, whatever happened to the guys who were consistent and stayed in their weight class and dominated for a decade. And for me,
The pros and cons, like marketing, or the pros and cons, like body for your chances of winning, pros and cons of your legacy.
I think in terms of our discussion point, like I was kind of arguing that, you know, I think it's more important to be consistent over time in the same weight class. And it's not as important to jump weight classes, where I think you took more of the side that jumping weight classes is what we need to do. And I think we both kind of talked about that. Like, you jumping weight classes is a it thing. It's kind of like the flavor of what's going on right now. And
yes, I think that's
consistency
what I meant.
is more a flavor of the past. And I think a lot of champions, guys like me, fighters, look at the consistency of dominating a division over time and actually beating the same contender who worked his way back up to number one contention is really,
yeah, but you
really
also
impressive.
Went up to 147 for an opportunity.
I did it for money. You know, I had
exactly.
an opportunity to
fight. So there were a lot of factors.
Yeah. But then I went back down to 140 to try and win a world title again. Like, it was so, you know, and I wish I would have gotten an opportunity to, you know, defend my title before I moved up to fight Pacquiao at 47. But they kept throwing me big money fights at 47. I never wanted to fight at 47, but everyone, all the money all the fights that were offered to me that were big names and the guys that I wanted to be in, fights I wanted to be in, were at 47. I would have loved to have been a dominant 40-pound champion who defended my title over and over again, kept fighting those kinds of guys, rather than a guy who jumped up to 47 and then to 54, because I just really, one, I couldn't do it. But also, I don't know, I think I respect the guys. I respect the Bernard Hopkins and the Triple G's more than the guys who are just constantly just jumping weight classes. And because, and this is a little caveat and kind of behind it, drugs. A lot of guys who are jumping weight classes, there's drugs involved. Guys, I've become the anti-ped guy, but I should be. Everyone should be.
Anti-ped guy that knows everything about peds.
Right. That everyone thinks I am the ped guy because of that, but whatever.
Yeah. Anyone hit you up for PEDs? Besides me?
Yeah, all my actors. All the actors on the movie are like, what are we taking?
I'm down.
Everything you want.
I'm down to try them out. Yeah, it's an interesting debate because it pretty much comes down to the time period too. Like, Golovkin had chances to move around, but he was also a big name and he had HBO behind him and he had a big marketing team behind him. Hopkins could stay at one weight because there was a lot more contenders there. Whereas today, you know, you have to jump around to make big fights. We just talked about this earlier on the show. Teofimo is being floated to fight Shakur Stevenson. Shakur Stevenson's at 135. You know, in maybe the past era, Shakur stays at 135, and there's like five or six legitimate contenders for him to make fights. There's a network behind him in HBO that has a huge budget, and they can do that. Whereas today, you almost like have to jump around to make these fights. Not only that, I believe the jumping around kind of creates these matchups that we wouldn't have normally seen, and it creates some excitement for fans. So I think it's the pros and cons can be debated, like, to the root of the sport and like the essence of the sport. I get what you're saying, Chris, like, stay in one division, dominate it, be known as a legend of that division. But it is entertainment now, more than ever. I believe it's entertainment is more than ever in boxing. So you kind of have to jump around a little bit at times to make these
it's just me
mythical
being
matchups.
It's me being an old head. I don't love the mythical matchups either, but
yeah, so that's a fun debate. I enjoyed all of our voicemails as usual. It's the best time to get in touch with everyone. We need more, though. We need more voicemails. We got a lot, but we always need more. Chris, any final words before we jump back on later in the week to preview our big heavyweight matchup?
No, man, I'm excited for the end of the year and we get some of these big fights going. We had a bit of a lull in the last couple months. August and September are a little bit slow, but I think things are picking up and we're going to be covering everything as always. So make sure you guys are checking Inside Boxing Live and tuning into us twice a week. But yeah, man.
Everything's going to heat up, especially me as a ring card man. Not boy, man. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you next time.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it three times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.